go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A little over a minute past the hour, and this, by God, is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, and there's an easy link to it there. I'm headed there right now, as a matter of fact. It's also the home of our podcast archives, our archives for that matter. It is also the home of the Listen Live pop-out players, which work fabulously well. And yes, it's the home of the contribute page of the website, which is how we keep this entire thing rolling along. Yay, I'm into the chat room. We've got a nice group already formed up in there. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Carol Baker. Good evening, Devin and Kathy and Lance Rocks and Sparky and Sergi and Texas T. Yes, of course, Sparky, the longtime indefatigable veteran moderator, along with Lottie and Texas Betsy of the Horn chat room. If you would, and I've got some got some good news. Tonight we have a challenge on the table. Ed's original idea of have a show on me seems to have caught on a bit. And thus, this evening, we have, coming all the way from Sweden, our buddy Scott's Have a Show on Me challenge. Have a program on me. We like to call this a program, not a show, because, you know, it ain't necessarily for anybody's entertainment. Because, well, no, it's a community. Yeah, okay, so we entertain each other a little bit, but we also inform and we discuss and show seems kind of, oh, vacuous and so forth. So, in fact, we have our buddy Scott's Have a Show on Me Swedish version on this evening. And it stands as a challenge to try to get another day of the Horn out of the way and stay out in front of things, because in fact we ended the program last night still waiting to finish off Laborman's challenge, and toward the end of the program, yea verily, lo and behold, from out on the frozen front range in Montana, rode Kate, who finished off that challenge. And then earlier today I got a note. I got a note from Roger, who jumped in on the on this evening's challenge, which I had previously announced. And so we have only $100 to go to meet our buddy Scott's Have a Program on Me challenge, which will turn it into Have Two Programs, right? Right. Let's see, Roger, also, provided a note. He said, perhaps today, Veterans Day, yesterday was the Marine Corps birthday, a little like kids born here in the latter part of December, they tend to get one big gift instead of two lesser ones. would be the right program to introduce the campaign to get veterans' IDs made valid for voting in Texas and elsewhere. I still think it was bone pieces from that ceremonial necklace that showed up in your MRI. So far as I'm concerned, they should exit stage left and dissolve to black. That is a good idea. And hopefully, when the Texas legislature next meets, because expecting anything of the Congress is probably just silly, maybe the Texas legislature will decide that having honorably served one's country and having a photo ID from the Veterans Administration indicating that you are being treated for injuries, maybe that would be. Maybe that should be enough to provide legitimacy to one's act of engaging in the franchise down in Texistan. I think that's a fine idea, Roger. A fine idea indeed. And, of course, it is the 11th day of November 2014. It is the anniversary of the end of the great exercise in capitalistic blood bathing that began in the year 1914, 100 years ago. It would take 4 years, or a little more than 4 years, to wrap up that scene. 4 years and God knows how many lives. Horrible, horrible acts of human butchery. And so at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, an armistice was declared in that war in 1918. And it was, for a very long time thereafter, noted as Armistice Day. As a child growing up, I was always reminded by my parents that this was Armistice Day. Somewhere along the way, and I didn't bother to go and find out exactly when, but somewhere along the way, the 11th day of November was transformed into something called Veterans Day, which, to my way of thinking, was a mistake. Not a mistake because we don't need to honor veterans, but a mistake because there were at least 363 other days available for honoring all veterans, regardless of whether they participated in war or not. There were 363 other available days for doing that. Memorial Day was already on the calendar. I do not begrudge veterans Veterans Day. Do not for an instant think that that is what I am saying. But I think we would have been better served to retain the 11th day of November as a memorial to the 20th century's first great, stupid, ignorant, dumb, bloodthirsty, money-drenched, monarchy-driven visit to the abattoir. Oh, the things they called it. The war to end all wars. The Great War. Great as in big, not great as in wonderful. The war, and this one has to get hung around the neck of Woodrow Wilson. The war to make the world safe for democracy. When arguably, some democracies were involved in that war itself. Oh, granted, no, Tsarist Russia was not a democracy. There may have been some democratic elements involved in Kaiser Wilhelm's Germany. There was certainly no democracy in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. the Ottoman Empire of the Turks was not democratic. But by the time in 1917, when the United States entered the war, and remember, Woodrow Wilson had been elected in 1916, reelected, on the promise that he would keep us out of war. And that promise lasted, about a year? Less? We entered the First World War after the sinking of the Lusitania, which was just chock-a-block with war materials bound for Europe. But we acted with tremendous outrage, and it provided sufficient casus belli to let everyone who felt like they were missing out, and by everyone, I mean all the moneyed interests and all the one percenters who felt like they were missing out on all the fun and money to be made off of the war, to get us into it and send American boys and some women who didn't have a moneyed interest in the war off to fight it. Yeah. The war to make the world safe for democracy. It was 1954, Ron and Raleigh informs me. Along about the same time that we added "under God" to the Pledge of Allegiance. It was 1954 when Armistice Day became known as Veterans Day, in yet another fit of faux patriotism perpetrated by a useless Republican Congress. The Congress that was Republican in 1954, wasn't it? I think so. Because we were all wrapped up in the hoodooed, dummied up, faked up, frauded up, ginned up furor of the Cold War, in which the Ruskies were bound and determined to come over here to America and make us be all commie like they was, and things like "better dead than red" began to find some foothold, some purchase in our lexicon. So I'm not trying to be a crank here, but I think we would have been better served, all veterans, to keep November the 11th as Armistice Day and pick any one of 363 other days to honor all veterans everywhere in the country. But I wasn't born yet, and they didn't ask, and the country was in a right-wing frenzy, and so we wind up with Veterans Day. And we wind up with a Veterans Day where, reflecting on the meaning of veteransness, of which I am not, becomes a... more and more, shall we say, stylized. And it was toward that end that I received a note earlier today from our newest news ninja, Carol Baker, who said, I know it's Titanic Tuesday, and it is, but I wanted to share with you some insights on this Veterans Day. And directs me to an article at Salon, and it is a damned good one, as long as one is not afraid to deal with reality. An article by David Masciotra. "You don't protect my freedom. Our childish insistence on calling soldiers heroes deadens real democracy." It is indeed worth your time. It's rather a lengthy read. I'm not going to read it all to you here. it begins. Put a man in uniform, preferably a white man, give him a gun, and Americans will worship him. It is a particularly childish trait of a childlike culture that insists on anointing all active military members and police officers as heroes. The rhetorical sloppiness and intellectual shallowness of affixing such a reverent label to everyone in the military or law enforcement betrays a frightening cultural streak of nationalism, chauvinism, authoritarianism, and totalitarianism. Hey, Dave, you left out fascism, but it also makes honest and serious conversations necessary for the maintenance and enhancement of a fragile democracy nearly impossible. It has become impossible to go a week without reading a story about police brutality, abuse of power, and misuse of authority. Michael Brown's murder represents the tip of a body pile, and in just the past month, several videos have emerged of police assaulting people, including pregnant women, for reasons justifiable only to the insane. To wit, for instance, let's travel now to the lovely hamlet on the banks of the Kanawha River, known as Charleston, West Virginia. It was in Charleston that a member of that city's police department accosted a homeless man. No, really. It was in August, as reported by the Charleston Gazette, when a patrolman by the name of Brian Leitner decided to upbraid a 26-year-old by the name of Andrew Joel Hunt along the Spring Street Bridge. A number of homeless people were having some sort of an argument while standing in the road. 26-year-old Andrew Joel Hunt admitted he'd been drinking, and patrolman Brian Leitner arrested him when he refused to leave. He eventually got out of jail. Andrew Joel Hunt did. And that's when he realized that patrolman Brian Leitner had thrown his backpack containing all of his worldly belongings, which is kind of the way it is when one is homeless, including his laptop computer, into the river. That laptop, the reason he hung on to that laptop so dearly is because, yes, even homeless people try to get unhomeless by using the modern tools available on the internet, but also for sentimental reasons. Mr. Hunt's laptop contained the only photos that he possessed of his dead wife. For Mr. Andrew Joel Hunt is a widower. There was no doubt that his stuff had been thrown in the river. A dive team went into the river and found it. Meanwhile, by way of self-excusing, Patrolman Leitner said that dealing with homeless people is a frustrating job and it takes a toll on you. He was suspended without pay, the patrolman was, and has since been allowed to resign from the department, which means that since he hasn't been fired, he can probably go somewhere else and get on their police department and maybe throw some other homeless person's last remaining photographs of his or her dead spouse into some stream. Or maybe just beat the hell out of them. Or shoot them. Or tase them. Or pepper spray them. For being, you know, homeless. Right. So yes, I do highly recommend David Mascarota's... No, Masciotra's Salon article, "You Don't Protect My Freedom, Our Childish Insistence on Calling Heroes, Calling Soldiers Heroes Dead in Israel Democracy." I do recommend it. Carol continues and says, "The article addresses our juvenile mandatory hero worship of anyone who ever put on a uniform, and I loved it because it struck a chord in something I'd been wanting to say for a very long time but didn't, because I was afraid of coming off as anti-American or ungrateful to those who served. But it put into words exactly what's been at the heart of what's been truly bothering me. Of course, there are people in uniform who have served admirably, but this idea that merely donning an article of clothing means I have to thank you for your service every time I see you is horseshit. I can't tell you the number of times I've been accosted for my views by someone who has put on the uniform who demands I view them as a hero. Given the number of service members who have been the victims of sexual assault, clearly not everyone who puts on the uniform deserves the mantle of hero. I, like the author," Carol says, "understand the wars we fought over the last 13 years were about oil, not freedom. And I've been very hesitant to bring this up, though I've gotten pissed more times than I can count at Reichwingers telling me I'm a less patriotic piece of shit for daring to hold different views. The uniform doesn't make you a hero. Your acts and behaviors make you a hero." When I was doing my radio show, Carol continues, "months before the mainstream media ever discussed it, I did a three-part in-depth series on military sexual assault. Through that program, I have developed a network of ex-servicemen and mostly servicewomen who share with me the most gut-wrenching tales of how the chain of command covers up the crimes, the victims are labeled mental cases and drummed out of the service, and the perpetrators get promoted. I got one such letter this morning. Quote, I send this to you under the shroud of anonymity and the cover of darkness. I share some anecdotal observations. I find this fatally flawed thinking to be as alive and well among my fellow veterans. Several of my veteran friends think they deserve to double dip, receive 100% disabled veteran status worth a little over $3,000 a month and SSDI as much as $1,200 a month, as well as have several shots at vocational rehab training, GI Bill replacement, which means we're paying for advanced degrees for veterans that have no intention of rejoining the workforce. While on vocational rehab, veterans collect extra stipends while in school. What this means is that a veteran who does not want grandma to have the Social Security she paid for 50-plus years is getting my base pay that I pay taxes on tax-free, and they get to build fantastic resumes with no plan to use them. Of course, this is not all veterans, and I have to qualify my statement because any time we are critical of a privileged population, they deserve extra respect. I'm similarly troubled," the anonymous writer continued, "with the I paid for your freedom attitude amongst my fellow veterans. Every last one was paid. They got a generous benefit package and in many cases had a good deal of fun while in the service. Yes, they put their lives on the line figuratively and in many cases literally. We all knew that when we signed up. No teacher that has been deprived of life during a school shooting was declared a hero in the same fashion that veterans may or may not have served in combat, who may or may not have served in combat, were given. Yes, some people were injured and killed in battle. I am terribly troubled over the senseless loss of life and limb while in the service. The military rape problem continues to be a national disgrace, but we have a rape problem from sea to shining sea. Again, not all service members and not all veterans contributed directly to the rape problem, but an enormous number of them contributed indirectly by looking the other way. I do not want any of these heroes affecting police that serves the interest of my sons and daughters. On the rape problem alone, the military demands too much and gives too little to be called heroes. I often want to scream about Veterans Day. Those people who defend our freedom while getting drunk and committing rape all over the globe should not be celebrated. Veterans abusing other citizens via bullying, rape, child and spousal abuse do not deserve to continue receiving benefits, but they're protected by federal law. Can I share that I am an accomplished woman that several veterans have told to shut up and stop bragging about your accomplishments? I'm not supposed to mention my several higher education degrees, 12 years worth, and $91,000 of my own money, not the taxpayers. But any veteran that spends 4 years defending my freedom while shit-faced drunk in Germany or San Diego can demand accolades for defending my freedom. Signed, an anonymous Gulf War era veteran. Carol closes saying, Bob, I thanked her for her letter and told her I'd be passing it on to you. She thanked me and told me there were plenty of other veterans out there who feel the same way, and they often discuss it behind closed doors because the opinions are unpopular and because she fears that her job could be in jeopardy if she spoke openly. Anyway, just thought that on this Veterans Day, instead of blindly thanking everyone for their service and buying into the hero worship, some much-needed perspective was in order. On this Veterans Day, I will honor my second great-grandfather, John Baker, who served President Lincoln's Union Army in the Iowa 139th Infantry. Now that was an ideal worth fighting for. Amen and amen. The first time in my life that I got a real sense of the scope of the Civil War was when, as children, we would be taken annually on a sort of pilgrimage from our little northwest corner of Alabama, Brigadoon, to the banks of the Tennessee River, down on the Mississippi-Tennessee state line, and a place called Shiloh, or Pittsburgh Landing. And that was the first great bloodletting. I mean, it wasn't the first battle, but it was the first really significant bloodletting of the Civil War. It happened in the spring of 1862. Albert Sidney Johnston in command of the Union forces and Ulysses Grant coming down by riverboat down the Tennessee in charge of the Union forces. And it was a two-day affair. The traitorous Southerners very nearly took the whole thing on the first day, but were eventually pushed back and routed well down into Mississippi. And from there on, the Western campaign of the Civil War, just there wasn't much to it. One good ass-whipping, and the most that the South could do was hole up in Vicksburg and wait for the Union to starve them out, which they did. It took till, I think, July the 4th, 1863. Along the way, Albert Sidney Johnston, who was acknowledged as being the single most brilliant military mind the United States had at the time, he was shot in the leg, apparently pierced his femoral artery, and he bled to death in his boot there on the battlefield in the first day. But like I said, it was where I first got my first sense of the great scope of not just the Civil War, but war in general. I've been raised by a man who had gone to the far reaches of the South Pacific and saw very damned little of it because he spent most of his time in the belly of an aircraft carrier far below the waterline. And I heard about faraway places like Hawaii and truck, and heard him sing repeatedly the praises, and they were praises, I can tell you, of a young man who had not had fresh butter in God knows how long when they pulled into port in New Zealand and were supplied with New Zealand butter that my father swore from that day to his final was the best butter he had ever tasted in his life, and I have no doubt that it was. But on that battlefield at Shiloh, there are monuments. Then there are similar monuments at Gettysburg. But on the battlefield at Shiloh, there are Union graves with markers that extend over acres and acres. And there are individual monuments, obelisks and the like, that stand tall in the southern heat. And they bear single words: Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan. And in that moment, you stop and you think, my God, Iowa and Minnesota and Wisconsin are a long, long, long way away from the banks of the Tennessee River in far southern Tennessee, almost Mississippi. And they walked, for the most part. Maybe there was some rail travel. Maybe there was certainly some river travel. A lot of marching involved. And probably a lot of walking involved getting home if they survived. And there are a number of examples, hundreds of examples of the ones who did not on the field there at Shiloh, named for a little meeting house church. The Union soldiers got individual graves as best as they could be provided. The Southern soldiers were tossed in, had their bodies tossed into a pit and were buried in a common grave, and there is now a great big honking monument over them, too. It's a, by definition, it is a monument to treason. Back when I was little, I used to think how cruel it was to bury the bodies of the Union dead in marked graves, but dump the Southerners just in a pit and cover them over with dirt. But then, understanding that they had in fact been practitioners of treason, it occurred to me to realize that the only reason their bodies were not left to be picked clean by the buzzards was because it would create a larger health hazard to the greater community. So yeah, I too will honor, Carol, your second great-grandfather, Mr. Baker, because he earned it, because he responded to the call of Abraham Lincoln for a defense of the Union. And today, because it is the 11th of November, I have also thought of my direct forebears, my grandfathers, both of whom enlisted to go over there. The Yanks are coming. The Yanks are coming over there. And we won't come back till it's over there. There are photographs. Been looking for them all day long. Of my grandfathers, done up in their doughboy kit. One grandfather went on to serve. Another one, my grandfather Kincaid, was mustered out as having a bad heart. Murmur or something like that. But they attempted to serve, or did serve, in that nightmare, even though we got into it right late. And I remember my mother telling me about reading how she stood in the schoolhouse window and read In Flanders Fields. She would have been perhaps 7 years old, maybe six, maybe eight. But she read In Flanders Fields, the poppies grow, row on roll. And her brother, a couple of years older than she, stood in the classroom one room over on the second floor of that clapboard building, which no longer stands, and read something in that was popular back then called America Replies or America Responds. And so the idea of Armistice Day was very well impressed upon me, and even up to the end of their lives, when November 11th came around, they always said Armistice Day. And so that is what I try myself to remember this day for, a day when the world looked up in hope and said, that was awful. Let's not do that anymore. And then, in less than a generation's time, did it all over again. Yeah. Something on the order of, let me check here. 16 million dead in that god-awful conflagration. Some notes rolling in. Our buddy Luda writes in and says, in infantry land, subject line, veterans, in infantry land, we call POGs, or non-combat jobs, glorified refrigerator mechanics. POGs, person other than grunts. While we sit in a foxhole in the mud for 2 weeks in the rain without a shower getting shot at, no one cares. But when some paper pusher comes back with PTSD from seeing horrible things in combat, gets to be called a hero. Sorry if I sound a bit jelly. I guess life ain't fair. 8 years in the infantry will make you a bit gruff sometimes, and I understand completely, Luda. Ron in Raleigh says, I cringe when I hear anyone say thank you for your service. The American military has become hitmen for American and other countries' corporations. My only difference of opinion with you would be to quibble over your use of the word become, Ron. Because, of course, it was Smedley Butler who famously said, war is a racket, and proclaimed in the 1930s in that book that he had been a glorified hitman for United Fruit and various other corporate interests who systematically oppressed the developing world in places like the Philippines and Nicaragua and Haiti and Honduras. Ron continues, I feel that meme means thank you for killing innocent Iraqis, Panamanians, Grenadians, and others. Members of my family are veterans and respect them as individuals, but I'm not going to give them a blanket okay for their actions. What has become of America, Bob? I grew up in the Jim Crow South, yet I feel things are worse now. I don't have much time left on this mortal coil, and I swear I'm not going to miss it when I'm gone. It's a brutal assessment, Ron, but I cannot take issue with it. Our buddy Irish Dave says, I hate it when that happens. Thank you for your service implies it was my idea and not local selective service board number 24, just saying, yours in an exceptional, heroic way, of course. Yeah. What's that old line? Being boiled alive may be a lobster's finest hour, but he ain't there by choice. Your thoughts on Veterans Day are, of course, more than welcome. And of course, and if you want to wander by the chat room, we've got a nice gang in there. We're going to get out the chat room. We're going to get the chat room issues sorted out sooner rather than later. You may be assured. One other observation relative to Veterans Day. And that is something that was I had my attention directed toward it was a couple of years ago up in Madison, Wisconsin, when I sat down and watched Phil Donahue's documentary Body of War. It was about Thomas Young. Thomas Young was one of the first American soldiers to publicly oppose the war. I am using the past tense because Thomas Young is dead. In Body of War, Phil Donahue and Ellen Spiro documented Thomas Young's life after he returned home from George W. Bush's bloodthirsty adventure in the land between the rivers. Thomas Young was from the Kansas City area.
and he was shot through the spine just days after he arrived in Iraq at the insistence of a nasty little psychopath by the name of George Bush. Here he goes. He's calling names again. No. Maybe I'm wrong. So maybe George Bush isn't a psychopath. Maybe he's a sociopath. But he is not anything anyone would not note as being remotely mentally healthy. Phil Donahue reported the death at the age of 34 of Thomas Young. Phil Donahue stayed in touch with Thomas Young well after the documentary was produced, created. Thomas Young had moved to Seattle. According to the Bill Moyers website, Donahue, who visited Young last month at his home in Seattle, said the world had lost a bright light and a talented young man who was determined to speak out against this massive blunder that was the Iraq War. And if Veterans Day is to mean anything, then isn't part of that meaning the effort to stop making so many of them? The men who put together the governmental structure that we recognize as the United States were significantly leery of a standing army and not particularly fond of the idea of having one. Because they knew that having one on a standing basis would tempt people in possession of political power to use them. It was 5 days after Thomas Young arrived in Iraq that he was shot in the chest and through the spine. It was 2004. He was paralyzed from the waist down. And later on, because of the practice of not very good medicine, he wound up a quadriplegic. At one point in time, Thomas Young said he was done. He was just going to quit, he was going to refuse his medicines, and he was going to die. But he changed his mind. Late last year, he said, "I just came to the conclusion that I wanted some more time with my wife, and I decided that I really don't have the chutzpah to go ahead and do away with myself." So here, a little audio of Bill Moyers talking with Phil Donahue and Ellen Spiro about Body of War and about Thomas Young himself.
Welcome to the Journal. 5 years ago this week, President Bush invaded Iraq because, we were told, Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and was plotting with Al-Qaeda terrorists to attack America. We were told the war would be quick and tidy, and that grateful Iraqis would welcome their liberators with flowers in the streets. Well, now the war is into its sixth year. We're spending over $10 billion a month, with the long-range cost reckoned in trillions. For Iraqis and for American soldiers and their families, the human toll is even harder to calculate. Numbers alone don't do it. 4,000 soldiers dead, 30,000 wounded. But numbers aren't personal. The only way truly to understand the human cost of this war is to know someone who is bearing it. Someone like Thomas Young. Thomas Young grew up in Kansas City. After the attacks of 9/11, he enlisted in the Army because he wanted to fight the terrorists in Afghanistan. He was sent to Iraq instead. 5 days after arriving there, he was shot in the chest and severely wounded. He was 24 years old at the time and will spend the rest of his life in a wheelchair. Thomas Young's story is told in a film called Body of War. It premieres in Washington, D.C. on April 2nd, and then rolls out in cities across the country. It took 3 years for Ellen Spiro and the longtime television host Phil Donahue to make this film. You'll meet them later in the broadcast. But first, I want to show you some excerpts that will give you a sense of Thomas Young's story as told in Body of War. Here he is, arriving for a speaking engagement at the Lafayette Avenue Presbyterian Church in Brooklyn, New York.
Well, thank you all for coming. On the way down here, I was kind of worried that I would get here and I'd be speaking to an empty church. It took me so long. But for the few minutes I got to hear this wonderful choir behind me, well, it began to dawn on me that y'all would have been pretty good even if I hadn't showed up. You'll have to excuse me for a little bit. I get a little lightheaded every now and again, so hold on. I'd also like to, during this speech, I may say the word a lot and stammer a little bit, so forgive me for sounding a bit presidential. I called my recruiter on around September 13, 2001, when, if y'all can remember, the president stood on the rubble with the bullhorn and said we were going to get the evildoers that did this. And, oh, man, hold on a second. I'm starting to... Thank you. All right, let's hope that's a little better. But, and he led the rah-rah around the country and got everybody really excited, and I was excited. And I wanted to go to Afghanistan and get the people that did this to us. But after I joined the Army, it became clear and clear to me that we weren't going to go to Afghanistan, that we were going to go to Iraq. And more it began to feel with statements like George Bush saying that he... sought the approval of a higher father than his own and things like that. It really concerned me that President Bush was trying to use Jesus Christ as an advocate for the war. But I always remembered, at least from the Bible that I read, Jesus Christ was always about peaceful things and love and whatsoever you do unto the least of my brother, you do unto me. And... it just shocks me that a man who tries to live his life by such devout Christian philosophies seems to skew so much on this one issue. I don't really... I have to excuse me again. Sorry, it's a little hard to regulate my body temperature, and it is... on up here, but I heard somebody once say that the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. So just everybody keep together and stay strong, and one day we'll get what we need to get done. And thank y'all for waiting, and I hope I didn't disappoint.
So Thomas Young is gone. Thomas Young is as dead at the hands of George W. Bush as he is at the is at the hands of some Iraqi defending his home against an American invasion. And Iraq continues to bleed, and there is no relief in sight. And we seem to have learned nothing, because if you watch the TV, you find the only debate being between, well, should we send the whole army back over there again, or just some of it? Curiously absent is the argument for, when in the name of anything that is holy
will we learn to mind our own damned business?
Oh, yeah, but we can't let ISIL have the Iraq. I mean, there's too much oil. Did we say oil? We didn't mean to say oil. We don't want people thinking about oil every time we want to go kill people. But, I mean, they got a lot of oil over there. I mean, if ISIL had oil and they were participating in OPEC and pumping oil, and well, I mean, then we'd have to treat them like, well, and then suddenly they'd be partners with the other people who cut off heads that we like. And I mean, then we're confused. So I've been wondering lately if, because you know me, the eternal Pollyanna, Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, optimist that I am, I'm wondering if maybe there's a silver lining to the nightmare that happened to us this past Tuesday, a week ago. I'm wondering if maybe now that the Republicans are going to be in charge of the Senate, will maybe we start getting serious about being anti-war, those of us on the left. What left? Because, I mean, not just a hell of a lot of protests out there calling for no more war. I mean, everything seems to be phrased in terms of bullshit dualisms, false dualities. Well, you know, we can either kill them with drones or we can kill them with troops. Well, you know, we can either send a few thousand or a few hundred thousand. With never option C, let's not and say we didn't. And I reiterate, I remember when Colin Powell created that BS Pottery Barn rule, which wasn't a Pottery Barn rule at all, but it works. You know, where if you break it, you pay for it. But I think that metaphor needs to be extended. If the Pottery Barn rule is correct and real, and if you break it, you pay for it, yeah, I guess we're on the hook. But also, if you apply the Pottery Barn rule and you break it, you do not get to sit down in the middle of the floor at the Pottery Barn and say, wait, go away, don't bring the brooms, don't bring the dustpans, I'm gluing this thing back together. And, you know, maybe it started out as a lovely ceramic elephant. And by the time you're done with, you know, the glue and the Elmers and the wires, you've got, oh, I don't know, Salvador Dali's impression or Pablo Picasso's impression of an elephant that's all like angles and the tail's coming out of an eye and, you know, there's an ear on its ass. Because that's the United States continuing to meddle around in the Middle East. George Bush destroyed any sense of stability that existed in the Middle East. And it's still destroyed. And, oh my God, the pundit class, the supposedly smart people, the people that Barack Obama goes to dinner with instead of sitting down to beans and Kool-Aid and styrofoam cups with the liberals, they're saying that, by God, what we may need is another Bush. Another effing Bush. Does that just stop you in your tracks? I mean, does that make you just kick furniture until your toes bleed? Another, oh, and then through the miracle of the internet, yes, this morning, I saw a little bit of Morning Joe. And there was this long sort of valedictory piece by one of the drunk Bush girls and the dry drunk daddy and old Pappy Bush sitting there chatting at a patio table about something by way of making that bloody Klan, that filthy bunch of homicidal, sociopathic, psychopathic maniacs look somehow normative. Holy Jeebus. Merca. And so, shortly thereafter, someone said something about Hillary Clinton versus Jebby Bush. And away I went to kick another piece of furniture. Because that's a foregone conclusion, too. And then there was some Elizabeth Warren talking. What does she have to lose? And, oh, God, really? We just got over one. And I got a great story in the stack about a low-simmering feud between Greece and Macedonia that'll just blow your mind. Maybe we'll talk about that. Really, Jeb Bush? Really? I realize that a week ago today, we turned the car keys and the car was beginning to look okay. You know, we'd had it detailed. The little cracker crumbs were out from between the seams of the seats and everything. And there where Fido threw up in the back seat, you know, we'd finally gotten that smell out. And you know, it was looking nice and a little armor all on the dashboard. And the crack isn't showing there where it's sat baking in the sun. And really, you know, the paint looked good for what it was. And nice coat of wax will make any car look good. And so we gave the keys to the drunk guy. And they're going to run it into the ditch. And maybe through the ditch. And across the field. And maybe into one sorry old, lonely old cottonwood standing in a turn in the road. And then we, America, will come running up and go, what the? We just had it detailed. We had it waxed. It was running good. What did you? And you know what? The Republicans are going to look at us and say, what the? Did you expect us to do? It's what we do every time. It's our job. We're Republicans. We ruin things. We tear things down. We break things. We start wars that we don't need to be in. And why are you looking at us like that? But I don't know. Maybe we'll wake up now. Maybe we'll decide that what with the Republicans being in charge of the Senate come January and the House and more talk of impeachment being out there, maybe it'll be a nice idea, just maybe, mind you, maybe it'd be a nice idea to try to keep them from warring us up real good. Got a little note coming in from Randy in PA. A hot war with the Russians in eastern Ukraine as tanks are rolling in. You know, this sort of stuff used to freak me out, Randy says, but now it's just par for the course. GK in Minnesota says, hi, Bob. Thanks for mentioning this about Thomas Young. And mentions that Amy Goodman had a great interview with Phil Donahue on her program earlier today. GK says, well worth a view. Thank you, GK. Thank you. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about, James. James noting the punchline to that old story that ends with the scorpion saying, it's my nature. You knew I was going to do it when you put me on your back. Steve with a note. You forgot one thing. After you ask them why they ran the thing through the ditch, out through the cornfield, into the tree, the drunks look at you and they say, well, liberals made us do it. One of these days, Jed Clampett time. One of these days, I got to have a long talk with that boy. We do.
we need some sort of an intervention. Oh, but by the way, speaking of the Senate, and this being Titanic Tuesday, when we celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing, let's be certain here, when it comes to talking about somebody like Joe Mentum Manchin, my Democratic senator from West Virginia, I ain't laughing. Joe is out there staking himself some territory. Politico had an article earlier today, or yesterday rather, celebrating the rise of red state Democrats. Manu Raju and Burgess Everett writing, the centrists like Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp. Centrists, really? Is that what we call it these days? Could use their influence in the next 2 years to score bipartisan achievements on issues like energy and health care that could be central to their own future prospects. And by energy, what they apparently mean is the further poisoning of central Appalachia, the expansion of fracking into the rest of the country, ruining more people's water, and perhaps the Keystone Tar Sands XL nightmare, pipeline, that they all want to see built because, you know, what, the whole damn thing will provide 6 weeks' worth of oil consumption? Yeah. Lower gas prices. The Politico article continues, red staters and other moderates... Moderates. Yeah, if Joe Manchin's a moderate, I'm Mao Tse-tung. Red staters and other moderates could determine whether Mitch McConnell or Harry Reid prevails on any given cliffhanger vote, making these Democrats the new power centers in the Senate.
Yeah.
So then somebody got around to asking Joe some great hair. I mean, I think Rand Paul, if he really has presidential ambition, should probably ask Joe for the name of his barber. Or, well, in Rand's case, maybe he needs a weasel wrangler for that thing on his head. Anyway, this is the takeaway. This is the beauty. When asked about the prospects that his party would block the GOP agenda for the next 2 years, Manchin didn't mince words. That's bullshit! I'm not going to put up with that. Joe Manchin's not going to put up with any bullshit from the Democratic Party that he claims to be a member of. He'll just continue to endorse right-wing bullshit from the Republican Party that he's actually a fifth columnist for. Why can't that man just shut up and join the Republican Party? He is a Republican. He's never been anything but a Republican. Note from Carol today, the Chinese referred to President Obama as an idler and a rapper. Apparently they've decided to fix the trade deficit by importing American racism. Oh, God. And, of course, we've already had, what shall we call it, Shalgazi, Shalgate, Vladimir Putin going and putting something around the shoulders of the Chinese premier's wife, and then she kind of took it off feeling real creepy and icky and put on her own wrap or whatever. What I found interesting out of that exchange, though, was the fact that in describing it, and I heard this several times today on the for-profit media, reference was made to
faux pas by France's Sarkozy. What was never mentioned, only I was sitting there thinking it, what was never mentioned was back when George W. Bush engaged in one of the creepiest exchanges in recent modern history, when he decided to go over like a drunk boy at a frat party and give a neck rub to the Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel. No mention of that. I heard Sarkozy mentioned two or three times. But you remember that, don't you? I didn't just dream that up. That wasn't part of some nightmare vision I had when I fell in a fruit jar with the swirly straw, was it? Because I remember, I could swear that the President of the United States of America, dim leader, went over and put his hands on the Chancellor of Germany and began to, you know, give her the old Texas neck rub. Laura says she loves it when I do this. Of course, she's usually had seven or eight Darvons by then. Well, point taken, Will. Will from Chicago in the chat room noting, Bob, it would be an intellectually honest act for Joe Manchin to join the Republicans. Therefore, it will not happen. Probably entirely too sadly true. Oh, my God, we're 7 minutes past the end of the first hour of the program. Let us call a hasty end to the filibobster. And take a little break. It is Tuesday, so that means we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, which I look forward to every instance thereof. They just do such a wonderful job of it. So we got that coming up. And then your calls. We have at present, if this person stays connected, we have someone on the gizmo line. But the other line, 304-574-8178, is open. And I welcome your participation. If you'd like to help us keep all of this funded, there's only $50 to go to meet Scott's Swedish Have a Show on Me challenge. The PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. The mailing address, if you want to participate that way, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Remember, checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not Bob Kincaid, as I never even see the stuff. Boss man Wayne handles that aspect of the business. So, a little break. And we will come back. I love this particular song. It's poignancy. And I think it is more than appropriate that on Veterans Day, we mark the latest mass slaughter that resulted in so many of our veterans being needlessly harmed, wounded, killed, maimed. It's by John Koontz. Iraq. This is The Horn.
I remember your State of the Union address. You called a duty, you called on our nation's best. You laid it out plain why our sons and daughters should fight. There was no question, it was all in black and white. And like so many, my son believed all of this. Without a shred of doubt, he marched off to enlist. Then came a memo from a place called Downing Street. How can this be true? What am I to believe? The flag-draped coffins that you don't want seen on TV. I have something that I'd like you to see. This is the pillow where he used to lay his head. Some old books I would read to him in bed. Here's a trophy from when he played Little League ball. Here's another day I spend staring at the wall. I keep a room of his things, but he's never coming back. Please tell me, why did my son die in Iraq? I need the truth from you, not from one of your paid hacks. Please tell me, why did my son die in Iraq?
It's Tuesday, November 11, 2014.
Time is not on our side.
The final United Nations Climate Change Report.
We have the means to limit climate change and build a more prosperous, sustainable future.
Good news, there's still hope. Plus, flashback.
It is mankind and his activities which are changing the environment of our planet in damaging and dangerous ways.
To when conservatives accepted science.
Margaret Thatcher is a left-wing tree-hugging pinko. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The Environmental Committee, currently run Barbara Boxer, replaced by probably James Inhofe.
Yes, the global warming believer is out and the global warming skeptic is in. So finally, the Environmental Committee can focus on important issue like, who's stealing all our polar bears?
Yeah, what about that? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, while we have been mired in the election over the past week or so, and looking forward to the U.S. Senate Environmental Committee being taken over by Senator James Inhofe, America's foremost climate change denier, there was something else going on at the UN, and of course, it was getting buried by the election.
Well, yeah, the United Nations released its final climate science report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change 2 days before the midterm elections. This report is more blunt than ever. The planet is warming. More than half is due to human activities, and the implications for the future are serious and require urgent action.
Climate change will leave no part of the world untouched by the impacts. Human influence on the climate system is clear. The more we disrupt our climate, the more we risk severe, pervasive, and irreversible impacts.
Severe, pervasive, and irreversible. That was the chairman of the IPCC, Rajendra Pachauri, at the press conference for the release of the report.
Or as we call him around here, Mr. Chuckles.
This is the IPCC scientists' final synthesis report, the culmination of three previous monster installments over the last year on the science of global warming, the impacts, and the solutions. The key warning, we've already burned two-thirds of the way through our carbon budget. That's the maximum amount of carbon we can burn if we want global temperatures to avoid going over 2 degrees Celsius. That's about 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit above pre-industrial temperatures.
And that's by just the end of the century, right? The goal is about 4 degrees Fahrenheit. Keep it from going over that before the end of this century, right?
Right. The IPCC warns we must ramp down to zero emissions by 2100.
Zero emissions?
Yeah, that's kind of the bottom line.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Now, most importantly, according to UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, there is hope.
The good news is that if we act now, immediately and decisively, we have the means to build a better and more sustainable world.
Now, the IPCC finds that we already have all of the technology we need, and action on climate change is much, much cheaper now than dealing with the consequences will be later.
We have all the technology we need to get to zero emissions by the end of the century?
Yes, yes, we do. But time is running out, according to American scientist and IPCC author Dr. Michael Oppenheimer on CBS News.
We have a small window of opportunity the next couple of decades where we can slow this thing down and start to reverse the trend.
In other words, the longer we wait, the more difficult and the more expensive it will be. Now, to that end, final negotiations on an international emissions reduction treaty will occur in Paris in December 2015. And, of course, any such treaty obviously doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of being ratified by a hostile Republican-controlled U.S. Senate.
Gosh, I wish we had warned people about that.
So, State Department negotiators are reportedly pursuing treaty mechanisms that don't require Senate approval.
Treaty mechanisms.
Yeah, like going through the Montreal Protocol, for example. That's the world's first international climate treaty to repair the ozone hole.
A treaty that has already been approved by the U.S. Senate.
Oh, yes. Finally, Saturday, November 8th, was the 25th anniversary of the very conservative British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher's speech to the United Nations, urging action on climate change.
It is mankind and his activities which are changing the environment of our planet in damaging and dangerous ways. The problem of global climate change is one that affects us all, and action will only be effective if it's taken at the international level. There's no good squabbling over who is responsible or who should pay. Each country has to contribute, and those countries who are industrialized must contribute more to help those who are not.
And funny thing is, President Ronald Reagan agreed with her. That's the world we used to live in.
Of course, Thatcher's speech at the UN has gotten somewhat lost to history since the very next day the Berlin Wall came down.
Yep.
For much more on all of our stories today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our twice-weekly reports anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
If I could turn back time, if I could find a way, I'd take back those words that will hurt you when you stay.
20 minutes past the hour, and thanks going out to Robert. Thank you very kindly, Robert, for jumping in on the taking down the challenge this evening for our buddy Scott in Sweden. We now only have $90 to go to finish off that challenge, thanks to Roger and to Robert. Your participation is more than welcome, and in fact, even perhaps, dare I say it, hoped for. Let us go to the phones, the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Well, good evening, Edward.
Well, I just wanted to call and tell everybody that I lived through the McCarthy era, so don't let these bastards get you down.
Well, hear, hear. All kidding aside, there every generation tends to think that whatever is bad is the worst it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, you bring up a topic, Edward, that is well worth remembering. By the time FDR was running for president, this country's economy had been absolutely destroyed by the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah. And something I don't usually tell people, but I actually voted for Franklin Roosevelt.
You did?
Yes, I did. Now, I'll explain it. My granddaddy was going down to vote at the town hall, which was about a block and a half away from our home. And he said, son, you want to go down with me? I'm going down to vote. I said, oh, yes, Papa. So I walked down with him, holding his hand, and we go in, and everybody seems very happy and whatnot. My granddaddy votes. Then I want to vote. And they told me I'm young. Well, I just threw a fit and shut me up. The guy who was in charge of voting slapped this ballot down and said, put it right here, and I did, and he put it in the ballot box. I voted for Franklin Roosevelt.
Beautiful. Now, see, yeah. you just proved it. Doggone it, Edward. You just proved their case for him down in Texas. That there was what you call voter fraud.
That's right. It was voter fraud, and I didn't have to interpret the Constitution, pay poll tax, or anything except my hair was almost white, and I was almost translucent.
Well, that's right. But see, that part of it made him know that you were entitled to vote.
Oh, of course, of course. And by the way, I'm getting rid of the dish. They have dropped Turner Classic Movies and put on Glenn Beck.
Oh, no.
All day long.
You know, this is beginning to feel like a conspiracy. Suddenlink Cable got into it with what, Viacom, and the next thing you know, the Glenn Beck is all over polluting the cable system of a number of systems in West Virginia, and then there was the foo-fraw with CNN. And suddenly, and the reason they're doing it is, you know, Beck's channel is free.
Oh, it is?
Oh, I have no doubt, yeah.
Well, my word, I know I'm going to get rid of the dish now.
are you on DirecTV or Dish Network?
It's the Dish Network.
Yeah, yeah.
So, oh, well, bye-bye, Dish.
Well, and maybe bye-bye, Glenn. He just recently announced that he has a mysterious neurological disorder. I think it comes from having his head up his rear end, but
That's exactly where it was, because I watched the whole thing this afternoon, and he explained how God had healed him.
But, of course, he didn't sit around waiting for that to happen. He went to doctors.
Yeah, in New York City.
Wait,
why didn't he go here in Dallas? We got good doctors.
Yeah,
here.
I mean, he moved away from liberal Connecticut to get down to freedom and God's country in Texas, Stan.
You're telling me.
Yeah, why did he go all the way back to New York? I mean, maybe he was afraid of getting the Ebola.
I'd give him Ebola if I could get my foot up his butt. Oh, dear, I shouldn't have said that.
Well, there you go, being unchristian again, Edward.
I know. I do it all the time. Well, you all take care, and I enjoy talking with you, and I want to say hello to all the Horn family, and take care of yourselves, and like I said, don't let the bastard get you down.
Amen, and bundle up, because you've already got the cold stuff. We had ourselves a near 80-degree day here today, but it's... I saw that it had gotten brutal as far down south as Amarillo.
Oh, yes. In fact, I went out and gave some food. I have possums that live in my backyard and raccoons. And I may have a coyote or two. I don't know. And I live in the middle of Dallas. I live in the old part of Dallas. So I've got all sorts of critters out there that I have to feed.
And they'll be neat.
This is a big possum, let me tell you. Mm-mm.
Now, wait a minute. That last mm-mm made it sound like you thought he might be tasty.
No, I ain't into possum and taters. I don't think so.
Edward, you have a wonderful evening.
You do too.
All right. Bye. Bye now. Oh, our dear friend Edward calling from Dallas. By the way, for Carol Baker's benefit, Edward just loved the pig song the other night. I got a note from him saying, can you send it to me? I said, I don't have it handy, but Edward did. He loved the pig song. Let's run over to the other line. I think we got Lance with us. Hey, Lance.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm really good. I want to give a good word in for you on your neck going forward.
Okay.
So, I don't know what the outcome will be, but hang in there.
Well, I'm certainly going to try. And I'm going to try not to sit here and bellyache just a whole bunch.
Can I react to the election last week?
You can react to anything you want to. It's a regular joint.
First, I wanted to say, I surf with a veteran. He's my age. And I am proud to say thank you for your service. But I would never get into it more than beyond that, because I'm not a veteran. You know what that conflict did. It divided my father and I for the rest of our life.
Oh, my God.
He was a Defense Department Republican.
Oh.
Now, you know, we reconciled toward the end. He died at 90 last year. And we reconciled toward the end, but it was never the same like it was before that conflict.
Well, a few years ago, I read some remarks, and it was probably around Veterans Day, by a Gulf War vet, and he said, will you all please, for God's sake, stop saying thank you for your service? He said, just say welcome home, and everything will be fine.
Okay, welcome home. That sounds good. But, so you can see, I have a lot of emotion on the subject, and I don't really want to get into it now. What I wanted to do is give my personal response to the election, my intellectual response, and then I think I have a ray of hope.
Okay.
May I?
Go right ahead. You need not ask permission. This is just neighbors talking over the back fence.
Wow, how wonderful. Emotionally, it reminded me of an event the Diggers held in 1967 called the Death of the Hippie. And they carried a mock coffin through the streets of the Hate, because they wanted the media much of the idea of hippiedom, you know? So they just wanted to kill the whole idea, and that's what the Republicans did to me personally last week. But there was the subterranean thing where everything the people did was pro-hippie. So it was a kind of a mind-bending election, which I think has something to do with my son's generation coming up. He's 30. I think they call them the millennials.
And, you know, yeah.
I don't know if you know those people.
Some, yes.
Well, my son is 30. And my liberalism, it was in part sprang from prosperity. I had the time to renounce materialism. And my son hasn't been that way. He's achieving, you know,
yeah.
From where to go. So what that means for the future, I don't know. But, you know, I read a story yesterday about how all the talent on the Dem side is old people like me. And there's actually a younger bench on the Republican side, which is a concern. Anyway,
I almost find that hard to swallow.
Well, I'm no pro, you know, believe me. This is what the talk was, and it's what I noticed last week. Young Republicans being elected to this and that.
Oh, well, without a doubt, they've got a young crop.
Okay.
But I don't know what to say about the so-called youth vote anymore, Lance, because the way they stayed away in droves this time through, I don't want to beat up on any particular voting bloc. I mean, I think you can say as much about the old folks who came out and voted Republican as you can about the young folks who didn't come out and vote their brains.
Agreed.
But if you ask on the signal signature issues that affect this country, young people respond to them far more in line with Democratic Party politics, and I would say not so much Democratic Party, but, you know, progressive politics.
Right. Morality.
Than they do hardcore conservatism.
I agree.
Marriage equality means absolutely nothing. And by nothing, I mean the young people are like, what's the big freaking deal?
Right.
Where I think we have failed with young people is conveying the idea that this is their future we're screwing with.
Exactly.
I guess they don't feel like they got skin in the game. Is that what it is?
I don't understand it. I can only speak of myself, my family, the people I know. That's how I talk. And my son is very focused on his career, and that's it. And I was focused at that age on, you know, making art. You know?
Yeah, but the dynamics are different too, aren't they, Lance? At 30, a lot of generations, young 30-year-olds, are focused on a career, especially in the post-World War II era.
Right.
And young people who have been through college and actually have a meaningful job at 30 are damn sure focused on their careers because they are probably, in many instances, up to their earlobes in student debt.
Okay.
I mean,
anyway,
I'm not barking at you. I hope you understand. And there was a time in this country when young people could be focused on things like art. Now, art is practically non-existent.
Art and capitalism and all these wonderful things. So anyway, that's one initial emotional response. And the next comes from a guy wearing horns named David Brooks. And he says that Republicans won this election because they have roots in four dominant institutions, the business community, the military, the church, and civic organizations.
I take with probably an ocean's worth of salt just about anything that David Brooks says.
Okay. I don't know. Every time, when I was in the business community, I was never in the military. My dad was, kind of. Well, he was in the military. And the church and civic organizations, all I know is I was wearing the dark blue suit a lot.
Yeah. You know? Well, okay. Let's sort of unpack that a little bit at a time. Churches. I don't know what the percentage breakouts are on liberal versus conservative churches. I think Christianity, by its definition, in many of its manifestations, is authoritarian and even cult-like in many instances. I mean, I refer to the Southern Baptist Convention as a cult.
Okay.
And certainly conservative Roman Catholicism is
cultish.
It has its weirdo practitioners.
Don't forget LDS people.
Oh well, you know, yeah, we could spend a program on that.
Greetings from Colab.
Got your own planet, and just by virtue of watching Alpha House second season over on Amazon Prime, I learned about a Mormon practice called soaking. And when I told Agnes about it, she was like, "What? Really?" And so we thought maybe that was something funny that Gary Trudeau came up with, and I went and researched it. No, it is apparently real.
It is
something that kids at BYU came up with as a way of getting around the proscription on premarital sex.
Oh, well, they'll think of anything. You know,
what happens is the guy gets to put his in the girls, and they just lay there. They absolutely do not move.
Wonderful.
And it's called soaking.
Yeah.
So that they even come up with euphemisms like, "Oh yeah, she's a real hot tub," you know. And I couldn't believe it. So the churches, and I know from experience around here in Appalachistan, there was Republican politics, right wing politics, anti Obama, anti EPA, anti clean air, anti clean water stuff. That's been preached every Sunday since 2008.
Yes.
So there's an element of truth to that, I suppose. Civic organizations, yeah, I guess there's not a lot of liberal members of Rotary.
That's right.
I know that there are some, though, because, well, by golly, we've got him on this network in the form of Dr. Bill, and he does what he can. And Boss Man Wayne is a member of the Chamber of Commerce. And he marches in and he gives them Hail Columbia at every opportunity. because he's kind of a visionary, Boss Man Wayne is. And he said, "Listen, you can't," and it all started with his vision for the horn. You know, and that was born out of the idea that we cannot just concede any field of endeavor to the right wing.
That's a good point. I adhere to that in certain areas. Religiously.
So, there's no doubt about religion, probably civic organizations. What were the other two?
I don't remember.
There's two other things. The question,
you know,
being...
military.
Oh, the military. Well, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, there is no doubt. And the other one is right here. Civic organization, the church, the military, the business community.
Okay, so maybe David Brooks is right.
Well,
God, that's something I never thought I would hear myself saying.
Well, you know,
about
wolf in sheep's clothing, that's David Brooks.
But even taking all of those together, Lance, they cannot outdo or they cannot outnumber the vast number of working people in this country, and that's where we get into trouble.
I know that, and it's the organization part is the difficult part, is it not? Anyway, my inspiration is Gail McLaughlin, and you can see her at Mayor Gail, MayorGayle.net, MayorGayle.net. She just won city council in the city of Richmond, California, with a progressive coalition fighting Chevron.
Yes.
Which basically owns Richmond.
Yes.
And she won. And
In fact, I had a note from our buddy Tom, who is also out in the Richmond area, who said, "I am so proud of my town."
Let me tell you one other point. After hearing her interviewed, and the interview is with the gentleman is on that page. You'll see it. She talked about a program the city's had for 10 years or something where they go for the loans of people who are underwater in their houses, and the city threatens foreclosure, or threatens eminent domain to seize the house. And the bank, which owns the loan, begins to negotiate with the city because the city has threatened eminent domain. And the city buys the loan discounted. and then sets it up back to the original owner at the current market value. It's a brilliant program. So things can be done. It takes a whole community, you know.
And I mean, there were little glimmers of hope all over the electoral map last Tuesday. It's just that, and most of those were initiatives relative to that related to ordinary people's lives.
That's right.
The Democratic candidates were either terrible, or Democrats didn't come out to vote, or they declared themselves too ideologically pure to vote for a middle of the roader. Or there's a bunch of ors, or they were drowned out by right-wing money. I've seen a couple of places where people have described trying to run a campaign in which Democrats couldn't buy radio time because every last avail had been bought by some right-wing PAC, some right-wing shadow group, some dark money outfit. And so they were literally stifled regardless of Federal Election Commission rules.
The country is drowning in it, and some of it comes from overseas, and we should find out what money it is that's coming in from overseas to interfere with our elections.
Yeah, well, it's coming in from all over. And
I'm just saying,
you know, it's really fun. What's really fun is when you tell a diehard Fox viewer that the majority minority owner at about 48% of News Corp is actually a Saudi.
Exactly.
And they immediately, well, you're just lying because you hate Fox.
Well. So anyway, Bob, that's all about my feeble brain this evening, and thank you so much for all you do.
Don't thank me. Thank you, Lance, for helping to make this community what it is. This is not about me. This is about the community we have built together. And I don't say that to blow smoke at anybody. I would have precious little interest in doing this, and there would certainly be no need to do it live if I was just sitting here babbling into a microphone for 3 hours, and I would find that about as attractive as daily dental work.
Well, for anyone new, please go to the chat room, because that's where it started for me. It's where it starts for pretty much everybody. It's very easy.
Nobody makes you ride a goat.
Look at me. Here I am, a quivering mass of anxiety. And listen to how relaxed I sound.
And this is only your second call.
I know.
you're gonna be loose as a goose by your third one. Hey, Bob, what's happening? What's happening, Lance? Not much, man. You? Oh, great. Yeah.
You don't want to hear that, even though it's not FCC regulated. You still don't want to hear it. Okay.
Take care, Lance. It's good to hear from you.
Bye.
Bye. Lance is not kidding. It is easy. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, wait.
Hey.
Am I on there?
You are on.
Oh, hey, it's Luta.
Oh, hey, Luta. What's up, man?
I just wanted to call and say hi.
I'm glad you did.
Very good. Stay in my defense.
Well, you are certainly welcome so to do.
Yeah, I've never called a radio show.
You know what? You're going to get through this.
Yeah,
you're going to get through this just fine.
Yeah, I know. You know, most people, they always do that. Yeah. I know. I've been reading on Facebook. A lot of my friends are veterans. People will go, so thank you so God for keeping this country free and, you know, all the crap you hear. It's very rare you hear somebody actually say, thank you for your service, and even look at it even though they mean it.
Yeah, they're repeating a litany.
Yeah, like one time last year, I think it was like just about a year ago, I was doing a CT scan, and like the guy who was taking my stuff, after he'd done it, he shook my hand and said, yeah, thanks for your service, man. Appreciate it. And I was like, yeah, thank you for saying it all. Made me feel actually pretty good about myself. Of course, then everybody else in the room heard, and then they were all trying to piggyback. That's America for you.
Yeah, don't
better than it used to be.
Yeah.
I I remember my dad went to Vietnam. I remember the horrible things he would tell me that were said to him. So I guess if I'm looking back on that, I think I'd rather have people give me faith, praise, than...
Well, yeah, as opposed to... Sure.
Yeah. I don't know.
And you said you were 8 years infantry?
Yep. 8 years.
Do you mind if I ask what era?
Let's see. 98 to 2007.
Ooh.
Yeah. I got hurt really bad, that's all I got. I got medical retirement.
Is it okay if I ask where you were sent?
I don't like to talk about that too much.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm still kind of pissed off at the Democrats, though. Like, I remember posting on Facebook and everything, and telling everybody, but nobody believed me. I said, watch, the Democrats are going to filibuster off the table. Nobody's going to do it, and the president's going to have to veto everything because they're not the senators. And you might have a couple. There's a couple of ones out there. Most of them are going to be like, no, I can't do it. I can't do it. I won't filibuster. And the Republicans are going to push everything through. And so I'm really, no, it won't happen. It won't happen. Somebody will filibuster. Man, your senator today is coming out saying, oh, that's bullshit. We can't do that.
Yeah, did that make you as crazy as it made me? So the man has
so bad it hurt.
Yeah, the man has sat there and watched the Republicans obstruct every attempt to govern in this country. And is he afraid of Mitch McConnell? Is that what it is? But by God, he's not afraid of Harry Reid.
Like over 600 filibusters. You can't do that. We do one. Ooh, you know that's bad taste. There was a time when people like him had the good sense to just leave the party. And there were times when leaders would kick people like that out of the party. And the Democrats looked bad.
Well,
I was a proud Democrat, and I hate it when people... Because people are going to think that's what Democrats are now. That hurts.
Yeah, gutless, spineless, conscienceless. All of those things apply to Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin cares only about Joe Manchin. And he knows he's in trouble in West Virginia because I am part of an overarching movement that is making no uncertain terms, making no bones about saying, Joe, go. Go to your natural party. Go and be a Republican. They will welcome you with open arms. Go.
Hello?
Yeah, you're still hooked up.
I think I hit the hold button with my ear.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I was on a rant, too.
Yeah, it sounds like the 747's blowing through town. I heard it in the background there.
Yeah, I live like by the railroad tracks. I live on the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah, well, no, right side of the tracks as far as we're concerned. The left side. Let's say you live on the left side of the tracks.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I remember the Bush era. And you remember how the Republicans were. I think it's going to go back to that. Remember how bad it was?
Well, do you think,
I remember one of the independents had to join the Democratic Party just to even it out.
Do you think we're going to get, do you think we'll get Jebby in 16?
Oh, no. The country was never around with Bush. Not in this generation. I'll take another generation for that to happen.
God, I hope you're right.
Stranger things have happened, but, dead people did vote for Kerry in Ohio, so.
Let's remember, Jebby delivered Florida for George.
Yeah. That got him 2000. Ohio got him 2004. Who did he get? Ken Blackwell?
Entirely too well.
Yeah, it's horrible. I don't know. This country is so messed up right now. That's why I haven't really been watching news. I haven't watched much of anything. You've been missing radio. Oh, that's what I was going to say. You got to talk to iTunes. Because I was going to check your show. Because, like, much on the reruns.
Yeah.
And like every 2 minutes, a new ad would come up. And no matter if you pause it, mute it, it would just reroute itself and then start up again.
What?
And trying to listen to something. Like one of those advertisements will just pop up. And where is that noise coming from? And you had to go pause it.
I had no idea.
And just kind of restart itself. It's all really annoying. You know, iTunes used to make the advertising money. Not iTunes, TuneIn.
Oh, TuneIn. Okay, yeah, that was... Yeah, you were throwing me for there for a minute.
Yeah. But, yeah. But I don't have much to say, I guess. Just wanted to call and say hi.
Oh, I'm glad you did.
Happy Tuesday. I hope everybody out there is doing good.
Thanks, Luda. I really appreciate it. Well, do not hesitate to call in again. You are welcome here anytime. And just as Lance Berg, just as Lance Berg, you know, the second time's easier than the first.
Yeah, like I'm just trying to think too fast. Well, I'll get off to let other people on.
All right, good to hear from you, Luda. You are welcome anytime. A peaceful Veterans Day to you.
All right, you too.
Bye now. Bye. Our buddy Luda. And that means one line is open, 304-574-8178. And we will go to the one that is not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Bill, what's up?
I don't know. This day is always funny to me because of the fact when I was a kid, Armistice Day meant the end of war, the end of a massive, horrible First World War. And you could buy these little poppies. The money went to, veterans. And, of course, why poppies? You and I know why poppies. In Flanders Fields, you know.
The poppies grow.
Yep. And, it kind of meant something more. The end of that war meant something. You know, I was on the tail end of when people still talked about the mess. And my second wife's father was a Marine, and he was out Saipan and Hiwo, and, you know, we'd be fishing out there late at night, and he'd just start talking to me. He never talked to his sons about it, but he talked to me. He said, "Bill, you're always reading something that every time I see you, when you either got a fishing rod in your hand or a book, you know." On vacation, that's exactly what it was, too. It was a time to reflect. Because there's nothing nicer than trolling over a hump. I had one of those paper graphs, which were stupendous operating tools, and I'd be dragging a crankbait, a wooden crankbait, trolling it, and all of a sudden you see this flash, and boom, you had a fish on the line, and I caught three walleyes in three separate passes, and ended up releasing them the next morning, put them in the live well. I had a live well I had set up with a timer on it that periodically would drag in fresh water, get rid of the old, and aerate the water, and let those guys go the next day. I said, "Well, Bill, you're gonna resent letting these guys go when you have a taste for walleye." But that war meant a lot more to my generation than it does now to anybody else, you know. I didn't learn much about it till later on, because what were we in for, 11 months?
Yeah, they were about right. Yeah.
So it wasn't written about much here, but anything from Europe, my God, it was the end of three empires. The Kaiser, he's gone, and Emperor Franz Josef, he was dead probably by then, and his...
And the Ottomans.
Pardon me?
And the Ottoman Turkish Empire.
Oh, I almost forgot the Ottomans. I was thinking the Russians. So the end of that Ottoman Empire has set us up to where we are today.
In large part with the divvying up done by the British and the French of the
yep.
the remnant of the Ottoman Empire, without a doubt. The roots of the roots of every rotten bit of business we're involved in over there is, well, there's a straight line that goes back to the immediate aftermath of the First World War. There's no getting around it.
Yep.
And that's one of the reasons I think we would be much better served to let November 11th be Armistice Day and find us another day and call it the day for all veterans everywhere.
Yeah.
This is a day because you and me could go for hours on this, Bill. The First World War gives birth almost directly to the Second.
Yeah, beget the Second. Yeah, well, the classic piece was who Ludendorff was.
Oh yeah.
And where was he when Hitler was getting busted in Munich? There's Ludendorff. To me, the whole thing was the old army and the rich folk in Germany. And there was a bad depression there, no doubt about it. But there was a bad depression here, too.
Well, but you said it was the end of three empires, Bill, but it marked the rise of ours.
Yeah.
Ours was nascent. Ours was in the birthing long before August 1914, thanks to our involvement in the Philippines and Cuba But it really came on after the First World War, because it was the industrial power of Fortress America that was able to make a significant difference. And of course, there was a hell of a lot of money made in that process. Also, out of the ashes of the First World War comes the failure of Wilson's second term, his stroke, Henry Cabot Lodge throwing a fit over the League of Nations out of nothing more than pure, miserable vanity, and bang, there's Warren Gamaliel Harding waiting in the wings, succeeded by Calvin Coolidge, followed by Herbert Hoover, the Great Depression.
Talk about
a domino theory, huh?
Yeah, the rise of Adolf, and Mussolini was as nutty as a fruitcake too.
But Mussolini got a hell of a jump on the Charlie Chaplin lookalike.
Yeah.
Because he was busy and working in Italy in the 20s. Italy's economic collapse that followed the end of the First World War was brutal in Italy and created the power vacuum that led to Mussolini's rise. And his outright invention of the idea of fascism.
Yep.
You can see, I think I mentioned this before, you can see in some of the fiction writings of Ernest Hemingway.
Yep.
Traveling in Italy during the First World War, post-war period, you can see, he documents the rise of fascism, and of course he documents it at its bloody flower in the Spanish Civil War. And then, of course, if we're going to talk about the aftermath of the end of the First World War, then you get into Gertrude Stein, The Lost Generation, Hemingway, Fitzgerald, John Dos Passos, Picasso, for God's sakes.
Picasso did a work on the attack and bombing on a Spanish city. I can't remember the name of the city.
Guernica.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, that guy was a smart guy, the guy that took over Spain. What the hell was his name? The guy that was still dead on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, Generalissimo Francisco Franco.
Franco. Yeah, because, man, Hitler wanted him to get involved in that war and go after Gibraltar, and he just didn't want to do anything.
Oh, and later on in the Second World War, Franco was a schemer because he approached Churchill about forming a combination with the UK to attack the Soviets.
Yeah.
Oy.
That anti-communist stuff was still going on. And well, that's my problem. Like, I don't know about Putin. I really don't. I just think he's not Mr. Nice Guy. No doubt about that. Who is of these people? You think the Bush family is?
Ah, come on. I would hope that most of America, although I think it may be a false hope, I would hope that most of America has learned by now that the Bush family is not to be trusted with so much as the corpse of a run-over skunk.
Well, the grandfather of the whole bunch should have been in jail.
Well, he made a fortune dealing with the Germans during the Second World War. Yeah, I don't know how many people don't know that, but it's true.
Sure, he should have been a slammer for what he did. Said they elected a senator from, what, Connecticut?
Yes.
Trial.
Yeah, that was Prescott.
Because he was a traitor, if you want to use that term, you know. It just, the end of that mess, I mean, that war fascinates the hell out of me because of the way, you know, we stood on the sidelines and made a lot of money. We lost a lot of lives over there, too. And one fascinating part was that, you know, the black soldiers in the United States Army in the First World War, they were assigned to fight alongside the French colonials. The French colonials were Algerians, Moroccans, Senegalese, you know. And they made a hell of a name for themselves. The French had nothing but praise for these men. And as hidden from the public, that these guys were, I mean, I hate to use the term brave, et cetera, but, you know, it wasn't until they did the movie on the Tuskegee Airmen that you got a picture that African Americans get their share of hard work during those wars too, because of that. That's one thing Truman did in 50 or 49. He desegregated the army, which is a positive thing. It is a positive thing, but what kind of reverse? It's like reverse positive, you know. It was the proper thing to do, but for the wrong reason. But you can't keep fighting everybody in sight. Because eventually somebody is going to throw a nuke at somebody. I hear these people talking about war with Russia, and I begin to wonder, are these people out of their freaking minds? Don't they ever teach them anything anymore in school? Because those of us who lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis, we know how close that was, what a close run thing that was. Well, I'll let somebody else up here, but I remember buying those Buddy Poppies and you know, there was quite a few men left. In fact, I don't think we lost our last Civil War veteran. The last one that I know of was a Union guy from Minnesota, Wilson, who was like 110 when he passed away. And that was the last of the veterans of that mess. Another mess, you know?
Yeah.
When I listen to Dr. Bill, it's like somebody keeps slapping me, and I'm aware of things that I was never aware of. Anyway, I'll clear the line, but I don't know why I'm so, you and I both have the same thing about World War One because of what it laid the groundwork for the rest of the 20th century, and in some ways even now.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well, I'm going to try. You do the same. Bye now. Our buddy Bill. Calling from Cleveland. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. this is Sergi.
Hey, Sergi, what's up?
Sorry, this is the first time I've called the show on this phone.
Oh, okay, no worries, no worries.
But anyway, I just wanted to chime in, you know, if you in response to Mr. Manchin, okay, and his use of the term moderate. See, this is what drives me nuts about the American political terms in general. You know, conservative, centrist, moderate, progressive. You know, here in the United States, those terms are meaningless.
Absolutely.
Because this country is so much further to the right than the vast majority of the rest of the planet. Okay. I read, like, you know, thanks to the magic of the internet, I have people I talk to from all around the world. Australia, Austria, you know, China, South Africa, the UK, Panama. And every time we get to talking about politics, one commonality between people, all these people I know from all around the world, one commonality that I always hear from, common phrase is, why is the United States so hard right? Because they, it just blows their minds. You know, people over here call Barack Obama a socialist. And they say, in my country, not even Bernie Sanders would be socialist. Much less Barack Obama. Barack Obama would be too far to the right to get elected in insert country name here. So we really need to put these terms into perspective for Americans, that this country, being so far to the right as it is, a liberal, a progressive in the United States is a right winger in Europe.
Very nearly,
Bernie
yes.
Bernie Sanders is just barely a left winger in European terms, in world terms. You know, that's my first point. And then the second point that I want to make is about the youth vote. Speaking as a member of the youth, and speaking as a politically active member of the youth, I just want to demolish this whole myth about the young people of today being progressive, because they aren't. And I'm going to explain why. While it's true that young people today, you know, vote more Democratic and more progressive than older counterparts, it's not because they're actually progressive. The term you often use, igamfu, you know, I got mine at you.
Right.
A conservative, a right-winger here, can, and most of the time does, you know, vote based on that. But the vast majority of progressives, especially young so-called progressives, they vote the way they do because of the same, reason, but for a different root cause. Okay. Right-wingers tend to vote because, you know, well, I got my XYZ, my health insurance, I got my, you know, toys, my this, my that, and I don't want to give it up. You know, the Democrats, they're going to raise my taxes, and I don't want to share with them poor. You'll never hear young pseudo-progressives ever mention the reasons they vote the way they do, but it's like, it will bring me benefit. And I'm not saying I myself, I'm just quoting them. You know, I'm just, you know, this will bring me some kind of benefit. My student loan fees will go down. My, you know, food stamps won't be cut as much. My health insurance will, you know, become a lot more effective and useful. It's selfish reasons on this side, too. It's not necessarily because of actual progressive, selfless beliefs like we tend to have here in this little commune. You know, it's the reason in this particular election they didn't come out is because of the timidity and the tepidness of Democrats. Democrats that were strong enough to come right out and say, I love Obamacare and I want to expand it to single payer, or, you know, I love, you know, what the president's done with the Pell Grants. I want to have them cover all tuition or 75% of tuition or whatever. That would have gotten the young people out because they vote based on income and too. It's just the reverse. Young people are not any more progressive than their older counterparts. They just manifest their selfishness in a different fashion. Okay, I have plenty of experience with that first, because, you know, if young people tended to be, you know, progressive, truly progressive, you know, I wouldn't have gone through all the stuff and still be going through all the stuff that I go through when it comes to mistreatment from others my age and ostracism and, you know, everything. I mean, you know, there's this whole thing about, you know, me wanting to, you know, find a greener pasture up in Illinois. It's like, you know, you know, here in, you know, because it, you know, perhaps in a, you know, bigger and more civilized area, perhaps there'll at least be a few friendly people, you know. But down here, you know, working with, you know, Battleground Texas, not a single one of them was truly progressive. They just manifest their selfishness in a different way. They're the same nasty type of person that a right winger is, and that's what wingers are.
And you know what? Y'all have other problems down there too. I don't know if you saw this or not, but, and if we have time, I'll get around to the audio. The young reporter who went around the Texas Tech campus in Lubbock.
Yes, I saw that.
Asking questions like, who won the Civil War? And when did we gain our independence? And from whom did we gain our independence? Very few correct answers. What show is Snooki on? 100% correct.
Exactly. That's another.
Who is Brad Pitt married to? 100% correct.
When I was back in high school, there was a very notable moment that occurred in my American history class in my sophomore year. We had just finished the unit on the, I forget what it was called, but it was the period up to when the Civil War began, so about up to 1860. And we had just had the test, right? And Miss Alden comes in, teacher, and she puts the grade test down on her desk. Bell rings, period starts. And the very first sentence she says is, now, I don't know if this reflects on me as a teacher, you guys as students, or both. But I, for the life of me, can't figure out why more than one person in this class answered the question, why did the British first land in America? Just because they wanted to work on the railroads. And I just hit the desk. I couldn't believe you.
Oh, dear God, that's tequila bottle time. Well, you just got, Sergi, you just got a note in from Ron and Raleigh as well. Ron says, tell Sergi, the reason this country is so hard right is because there are black citizens. White Americans don't want black people to get a goddamn thing. They would rather cut off their own yam sack than help those lazy, shiftless Negroes. That's not all white Americans, but enough to make the difference. Check the history of any social program, and you will see that people of color were excluded at the onset. And, you know, that's a reminder that, one, what he says about the social programs, true, but it's also a reminder that it does not take a majority in this country to really make a mess of things,
It only takes the barest of pluralities. And that bare plurality right now, Sergi, is the Tea Party, the teabaggers, the people who think Glenn Beck is smart, the people who think Sean Hannity has great ideas, the people who think that Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Paul Ryan are the brain trust of the Republican Party. You know, go to any party. You can have 50 people in a party having a great time. You know, the hors d'oeuvres are nice, the beer's cold, the mixed drinks, whatever. And there's going to be one guy who just gets shit-faced, liquored up out of his mind, and ruins it for everybody. That's the Tea Party. That's enough mean, angry, hateful white folks, and I should know, I live in a state full of them.
So do I.
I should probably not mention it. But, I mean, to make things a real boogered-up mess. I tell you what, Sergi, I'm gonna move on here because we've had a lot of folks ringing the lines, and I want to make sure as many folks get in as possibly can. Phone got through just dandy.
All right. Well, thanks for taking my call, Don.
No. Thank you for making it.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a good night, Sergi.
Have a good evening.
You too. Bye now. Onward we go to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello?
Yeah. Oh, Sandra?
Yeah, hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm going to faint. That's how I am. How are you?
Oh, you know, trying to recover from this election hell that I was immersed in. it was special. But, yeah, otherwise, you know, I'm just sort of laughing at everyone effusing about, you know, Obama, saying that the internet should be classified as utility. That's all fine, but in the meanwhile, he's breaking his neck for his legacy to do TPP, which would eviscerate anything like that. So once again, it's Obama just as duplicitous as he can possibly be. I'm sorry. I'm just sort of shaking my head thinking, Lord, what are we going to get? With him and the Republicans together, I mean, he's going to have a field day.
I'm not going to kid you, Sandra. I've sat here because the idea of the only thing standing between us and chained CPI or us and a grand bargain or us and entitlement reform is his veto.
Well, and, you know, maybe the crazies who hate him so much that, and, you know, Mitch Turtle won't be able to corral them because they just can't deal with it. That's the only thing we have is crazy white people who are deranged because they can't come to grips with, you know, the Negro and just that. And then, but Obama's not, he's not a reassuring figure at all. He's actually a quite a disturbing one. And, for example, he made a call to Governor Nixon, to make sure they got all the shit together to deal with the Negroes when they come out with Wilson can shoot niggers and it's okay, and they're getting ready for that. And, Obama he don't give a fuck. You know, I'm sorry. I think that, like I've always said to you years ago, that black agency is minimal and it's going to be worse behind Obama, but... Because when Hispanics become white, Negroes are going to be back in line.
Oh, Jesus. I hate the elemental truth of that, but, I'm not pushing back. I got to thinking the other day, Sandra, about something. Barack Obama beat their asses not once, but twice. I mean, it wasn't even close enough for him to steal, and that was the important part. But I got to thinking, so what? They're reclaiming a little. I mean, it makes them feel like they have tiny Johnsons or something or maybe they've got a little more manhood since they won these midterms or whatever. But no, the light went on somewhere along the way for me, and I thought, I think I got it. What they're working on now, the last of a two-term president are legacy years, right?
Yeah.
Well, what they're doing now is it don't matter what happens with the Barack Obama library, okay? What they're working on now is they're operating from the principle, it was bad enough that we had that one. We got to make sure we ain't never going to have no more.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's that, and, you know, I'm laughing at, if you read, I don't know if you read that Valerie Jarrett piece, you know, the Latinos are like, you know, fuck you, deportation president, you know, in chief, or, you know, whatever they call them. I mean, you know, so it's on, and I kind of think if Hillary runs, you know, and she got some sense, she going to pick one of the brothers down in Texas as a vice president, and it's on. You know, either the mayor of San Antonio, the Castro brothers, and there's one in the Obama administration now. So, you know, that's to me is sort of, you know, if Hillary had any sense, she would run, you know, be another historic president, and then have the Latino in waiting. And, you know, the white people's heads are just going to explode, but fear not. You're still white.
Still got that privilege.
But you know, the other thing is I am being paid as a feminist now. I'll give you that take with the election. These motherfuckers, like, and you know, and all these people who are like, they can't seem to go away from with the women issues only about your goddamn pussy and parks. It's like, hello, every poll said that women were concerned about wages, health care, jobs. Okay? Reproductive rights is like whatever. And these motherfuckers are so stupid, they don't know what to run on. It's women are people, they're humans, so go with the job.
Wait. Is this the fully actualized female argument?
Oh my God. I'm just sort of like, I looked at that and I thought, you know, you all, motherfucker, you're gonna run on the surveillance state. What the fuck is wrong with you? You're an idiot. You deserve to lose. Goodbye. Same with Wisconsin. Wisconsin, hello. You get what you fucking deserve. I ain't got no mercy. I'm like, damn, I don't know what to say about Wisconsin, but good luck to you. I know it's terrible to say, but I'm just, and that thing in Florida. Hello.
Oh, Jesus.
Good luck to you. Good luck to you. And who was the other one that won? One that want to bring back child labor, LePage?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And,
you know, but
how many times did I see on the following Wednesday, Sandra, that the election of Joni Ernst and Shelley Moore Capito in Iowa and West Virginia, respectively, were strides forward for women in the Senate?
Well, you also have a Negro who ain't a Negro, because she keeps telling us that over and over again. Mia Love, I knew that bitch would get in Congress one day. I've been following it. So she in Congress, and then you got that, you know, Negro down in either South Carolina or North Carolina who is like Reconstruction
South.
Redux, but he's a Republican.
Tim Scott.
So it is. It's full circle. So we got, you know, it's all upside down. But the Democrats got exactly what they deserve. They're weak. They don't run on anything that is right in front of their fucking faces. When you have red states saying, oh, yeah, raise my goddamn minimum wage, motherfuckers, and still voting for Republicans, you got a message problem.
You got a psychosis problem, I think. And do you remember back in 2000 and 2004, of course, I wasn't on the air in 2000, but 2000, 2004, when we were looking at people like, what was his name, Bob Schrum?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And dude was the Washington Generals of American politics. Existed only to get his ass beat.
I heard that. Was I having a daydream? But did Wasserman Schultz lose?
I don't know.
I heard that, and I was just rolling because they, if that's the case, that's like, dream come true, but she's just terrible. I don't care. I just think, blah, blah, blah. I could have, you know, it's whatever. I'm trying to, like, there's different races that are still, you know, not decided here in California, but I thought I saw that, but I'll check it out. But the other thing I wanted to mention was all the hoopla with, remember that woman who was walking in New York and the catcalls?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really funny to me because, of course, you know, you see it, and you're like, oh, my God, it's just a nightmare. But the pushback that was killing me, and I don't care if I piss off some brothers out there, but all the, like, oh, they only showed, you know, men of color doing it. Did you hear that whole argument?
Yeah.
Well, the problem with that, boys and girls, is that you people are so fucked up in your patriarchy, capitalist bullshit that you can't understand that as women can't walk through the world freely, your black ass can't either because you get shot, murdered, killed by the state. And the fact that they can't see the connection, fuck you. That's why all I gotta say to men.
Can we have a little historical moment? Seneca too, anybody?
Well,
Seneca.
I'm just saying, it's like, try to make some connections here. It's like you white men walking through the world, no problem. Women walk through the world with their bodies, they're entitled. You know, men think they're entitled to their bodies, their space, their whole thing. Black men walk in the world, and they are at risk of being murdered. So if you cannot start to make those kind of connections, you're a dumbass. And don't, you know, slag off women for not coming to your rescue when you're shot every other fucking day. Sorry. I just have to get that out.
Well, no. There's see, you can say things I can't say. And
well, it's all debatable, and I'm making realizations, but it kind of pissed me off because I'm like, listen, we need to have some coming together moment. And if you can't understand that a woman walks through the world differently, and yet if you're a person of color because you're under white supremacy too, you ain't going to be in the party. If you want to just be entitled to women and mistreat them, that's fine, but your ass still being locked up and shot by the same system that's fucking me over. So fuck you.
And, I mean, because I'm looking at it on a sort of microcosmic level in West Virginia, and it's really white, okay, let's just say. But how hard would it be to pull together? I mean, there's a hell of a lot of technology out there. People don't have to get in jets and fly all over the place. We can get together. We can form community. We can build these coalitions. Is it going to happen? Or am I just going to sit around for another couple of years playing clips of that asshole from Lincoln University saying, women quit getting yourselves raped?
Right. Oh, no. I mean, it's like off the reservation. It's just, and then the person's wondering why, oh, he might get fired. Now, I haven't followed up. Is he out? Did they fire him yet?
No. No.
I mean, but it goes across the board because the other thing I noticed, I don't know if you saw this because it was in the New York Times. It was like an open letter from these pig lawyers from Harvard upset about the new yes is yes policies that are taking over the college because guess what? Your body is your own. You cannot just be entitled to it. No, and these professors are all upset. Oh, it's a bit. No, it's a bit like you can't fuck your students anymore. So now you're a bit upset. So,
we kind of talked about this last night, you know, with Limbaugh, Limbaugh hiring a woman in L.A. to write a nasty gram to the DCCC saying that they had defamed him by pointing out that that he said that no means yes. I mean, you know what I mean? You know what I mean, guys? I mean, there's times if you know how to read the signs that no means yes, right? And he got shellacked with it and goes and hires him. Jesus, God.
Well, no, but it's funny because, I mean, at Yale, the same kind of thing is going on. It's like, but they have chance of no means yes, and yes means anal. So, is that...
No, don't bring up the Kobe defense, damn it.
Well, I know, that's my thing.
God.
Now, anyway, listen, I'll leave the feminism, but I just have to... Because it's really just troubling because, you know, we're at a point where, you know, you really have to start... doing just constant systems analysis, and if you're not a part of the party, i.e. rich, white, and male, then you need to come together with the rest of us, you know? And of course, if you go by Pablo Ferreira, you know, even the white man is participating in his own oppression, but that's not really my concern right now.
No, I get that. I'll handle that corner of the party if that's all right.
Yeah, you know, white people have that. But anyway, it's just, and because I'm only talking about it because we're in the U.S. here, you and I. You know, and this is what drives all the sort of sickness in this country. So.
And it is a sickness, and it is. I don't think it's entirely a uniquely American sickness.
No.
But it feels a lot like we got we've got a bigger dose of it than other places.
Well, when you still have science trying to come out and working really hard to establish race still as a biological determinant, you know, we're in trouble because the Genome Project proved once and for all that we're all human. Race is a social construct, and if you're black, everything is based off of that in this country. And so being black is a political construct, social construct. It isn't a sort of biological determinant because, you know, if you look at human rights, I mean, I don't know who had that quote. I think it's Eleanor, we're all born equal, free, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's across the board. But if you approach it with difference, then you're able to, you know, not get health care and not get education and not get, and you have a Supreme Court that can decide that, well, this worker isn't quite a real worker. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not a human rights-based sort of setup here. It's some people are more equal than others.
Yeah, it's the animal farm model.
Yeah. So,
exactly.
I mean, you know, the Declaration of Independence, you know, tries that. And unfortunately, most Americans are so stupid. They confuse that document with what we have, our real Constitution, which, you know, sort of makes...
Well, but you know that the reason people confuse that, Sandra, is because it has been deliberately elided. The Constitution and the Declaration of Independence have been deliberately run together, and it is a piece of received wisdom in the right wing that the Constitution incorporates the Declaration of Independence by reference, which is of course a pile of bullshit 10 miles tall because of some of the stuff that's in there.
Yeah, when the Supreme Court can say that my access to birth control, it's like, well, fuck you. You say that I'm less than.
Look. How do you have? And I'm sorry. It seems as if while on the one hand we have said that like the Udall campaign screwed up by just focusing, you know, being vaginocentric. On the other hand, you know, I think there's still room to talk about this issue. And especially from this perspective, Sandra, since when do we have a hierarchy of constitutional rights? How is it that no liberal, no progressive may dare so much as breathe a peep about the firearms disease in this country? And yet at the same time, we have to give ground. Well, you know, I mean, we believe that abortion should be rare. Bullshit!
Yeah, well,
No. I want lots of abortions. I want anybody to have an abortion who wants an abortion, okay? And
well,
I guess I'm a weirdo for saying that. Because,
well, no, it undermines your autonomy. I mean, forced pregnancy means that you're no longer, you don't have your own agency. You know, as a woman, you have
control
of your agency.
The larger issue is that a woman's right to choose is a constitutional right. It's not like marginal. It's not like, you know, Bush League constitutional right. It is a fully vested constitutional right up there with the right not to have to quarter troops in your house. Okay.
Well,
so if a woman wants to go and buy a gun, nobody's going to question her. But if she's pregnant and wants to buy a gun, we're going to make sure that she can buy the gun, but cannot make a decision about the pregnancy. And at that point, it ain't. I mean, all these goddamn stupid referenda and bills in legislatures, any one of these that goes up to the Supreme Court should just get bounced back. And it's like, no, dumbass, it's a constitutional right. Now, if you want us to start ruling on whether or not you can have one bullet or two, you can have this litigation as well. But until you acknowledge that a woman has an absolute right to make these choices, shut them up about your Second Amendment and about the, well, you see what I mean?
Yeah, no, but I mean, we're down to just law. And because, unfortunately, you know, sociologists, all these people, they seem to forget, and they put law on this sort of rarefy, and it's like, no, this society is based on rules, and the rules are the laws, and it means that they're controlled by people. So when these judges are ruling, I mean, this isn't, you know, the etched in stone. It's a political act. I'm sorry. I'm you know, really disturbed by how people just roll over with these blatantly political decisions that are sort of commiserating everybody.
But you're, and you are, to be fair, and I don't want to give away anything, but you are working in so-called feminist circles, but you're doing so in California. Is there anything, Sandra, that suggests y'all are safe? Because I've been arguing for a week now that, you know, the Pacific Coast is next.
No. It's, you know, the problem here is that the legislature is being sort of overrun by what is called corporate Dems. So you don't have Republicans, the party is so weak here, but you do have these sellouts who are happy to take the money that was otherwise going to the GOP. So, you know, we just passed these two amendments, which are just horrible, a water bond and a rainy day fund. And to make a story short, it basically takes money away from education and other funding priorities to put money away to pay the piper on demand in the next time they crash the economy. And then we have a water bond that is $7 billion, but with interest, it's $360 billion every year for 40 years to create dams for water that's not coming down. So it's, you know, we're looking at like a permanent austerity type of configuration here, and California is the poorest state in the nation. I don't know if people know that.
What?
So, I mean, the poverty rate. I'm sorry. The poverty rate is the highest in the country. It's right here in good old California. And we're going to have, we'll be drifting into some Mad Max shit if the drought is like this time next year. So, yeah, it's kind of, you know.
Unsettling?
The water thing is a bit unsettling, yeah. But,
Well, and you're experiencing an entirely different California world as far as I understand it.
Well, I'm in fucking L.A., which is, you know, it is fucking crazy. I just watched the whole Matrix series, and I'm like, yes, that scene on the highway is L.A. I keep thinking that's going to happen to me one day driving here because it's so crazy. It is just crazy. It's just, I'm so traumatized by the traffic. It's like, wait, I need to go here. I have to be there at 3. Oh, well, let's leave at 10. No, I'm not exaggerating, but it really is. What takes an hour can be 2 hours. You can be trapped. I broke down and I got the apartheid lane stuff. I don't give a fuck. Okay?
Yeah.
It's like Israel all the time because I can't be stuck.
Well, I tell you what, the email box has lit up at the mere sound of your voice. We have people hearing you for the first time tonight.
Well, that's entertaining, I guess.
Oh no, it's wonderful, and God knows I've missed you too.
We worry,
and. You know, I know the difference between Northern California and Central California and Southern California is rather profound. And you made a couple of allusions when we talked a little while back about, you said something along the line, I have some solutions for these clinic closures in Texas. And I've been thinking about what you alluded to all along. It's like, wow, yeah, maybe it's time. But to be fair, I've also missed our moments of shallowness because we do shallow real good, Sandra.
I know. Well, I know it's and it's always so much. But I can't even keep up with the football. Although I have to add that I saw that freak Sanchez. I'm like, what the hell happened to him?
Well, did you catch the Adrian Peterson news?
I don't see. That's the thing. The NFL is so dreary with this crazy and their views. No, what's the latest about that?
The NFLPA, the Players Association, has filed a petition demanding that Adrian Peterson's suspension be immediately lifted and he be returned to the playing field.
Well, you know all of us Negroes, we just like to beat the shit out of our kids all the time. Okay? Can we...
Yeah, because he pled no contest in Texas to the charge. He got no time out of it. And
did you see that, Kyle?
Yes. Yes.
That's abuse.
Beaten on... I don't recall a hell of a lot of stories out there that include the phrase, beaten on the scrotum with a tree limb.
That's right. And he's just, you know, trying to give his kids some guidance or whatever the gibberish he was going on about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you know, I don't really think there's a whole bunch of stairs going on there. So get back on the field and... what you can do for your sorry-ass team, I guess.
Well, I mean, is there anything left to save with the Vikings? I don't know. But
well, my favorite is my poor Raiders. What's up? Oh, my God.
No. Be an optimist. You've got it. You're going to have a whole new draft to fuck up next spring.
Oh, my God, no.
No, wait. Al Davis is dead, so maybe there will be a competent draft pick.
Well, that guy who dated a 12-year-old, I mean, to be fair, I guess he was only 14, but San Diego, they were doing okay, but they seem to be not so well now, right?
No, you mean Philip Rivers?
Yeah, Philip Rivers.
Yeah, see, yeah,
Kyle Bride.
The Jerry Lee Lewis thing. Yeah, I know. well, I about halfway flipped out a few weeks ago when I found out that Philip Rivers is all Opus Dei, Father Jose Maria Escriva fascist kind of dude.
Well, I knew it was something real, you know, religious. I didn't even know what religion. He's a Catholic? Oh, boy.
Well, no. It, not just Catholic. He is hardcore right-wing. I mean, you know who Escriva was. Escriva's the guy who founded Opus Dei. John Paul II made him a saint. He once remarked Hitler could not have possibly killed 6 million people. He wasn't that bad a guy. And this guy's a big follower, and he painted some Latin on the dressing room wall of the Chargers player facility, whatever, and they all wearing their Latin T-shirts and stuff. And
oh no!
Yeah, really. And I was like, ooh, this is just creepy.
Well, I know you have Europeans who listen. What's happening? Well, it's going straight down to the fascist tip there now, huh? Wow.
Oh.
I mean, overall, it just seems to be. And the riots in Belgium. Wow, that's kind of full on.
No, when the Belgians get pissed off.
Yeah, I'm like, damn, it must be deep. Because, you know, with UKIP winning every election they run in the UK, I'm like, that's a shithole. The way they're taking apart the NHS and their slave labor and
they won't be happy. You know, now that Scotland has decided to stay in the party, they're
huge mistake on their part.
I tended to think so too, but they're not going to be happy until they have turned the UK into America Light. And you know and then you got Tony freaking Abbott in Australia out there saying he doesn't want to hear anybody demeaning coal anymore.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, oh no, that man is crazy. And you know, they repealed their carbon tax, and the emissions have just skyrocketing. And once again, the people there are upset about it. But it's like you motherfuckers voted him in. So I'm just sort of. Especially a place like that where it's compulsory, you know, you have a big turnout. They couldn't deal with a bitch, so they voted that guy in. So good luck to them too.
Yeah. Good. So long and thanks for all the fish, right?
Oh my God. Okay. It is. It's just terrible. But you know, they're gonna suffer. They can vote that woman who owns half of Australia into power.
Oh, the nasty coal baroness.
Yeah, they need to work for a dollar like the Africans do. That one?
Oh, God, yeah.
Anyway.
Just can't, you can't turn your back on them for a minute.
No, but, you know, honestly, Bob, you're right. There hasn't, I mean, I haven't really noticed too much things that were extra funny either lately. So maybe that's just, I'm looking at it in the wrong places. So.
We got 2 years of big fun coming with Joni. No, we got 6 years of big fun coming with Joni Ernst. She's all the charm of Michelle Bachmann and all the brains of Sarah Palin rolled into one.
Well, no, let me just sort of say, can they not let that Chokely run ever again? Oh my God, she is such a bad candidate that she lost the governorship of Massachusetts
to another loser. They had both lost in 2010.
Oh God! So
it was like the consolation match, you know, the day before the championship. Hey, there's one for you. Deval Patrick's not doing anything. Vice presidential material.
I think it's gonna be another half millennia before any dark can get anywhere near that place. But that's just. I could be wrong.
Well, no, I think that's the job they've been working on, you know, making sure this can never happen again. Okay, I mean, let's just agree. You know, I mean, we might have to have a woman somewhere along the way, but this ain't gonna happen no more.
Yeah, well, I think people are gonna have a real freak out with old Hillary.
Oh, and what's this I hear earlier this evening that the Chinese press is referring to Obama as a rapper and an idler?
That's a little bit racist.
Yeah,
that's why there was the bananas in Russia.
God damn, I mean, the whole world's got the freaking disease.
Yeah, no, the Russians, though, are just way out of control. Okay, the Serena stuff, and now even the worst corrupt organization that is it FI, I don't know, they run the soccer. That corrupt organization, they have even told Russia, you're going to have to get it together because all the black soccer players are like, you know what? Fuck you. We're not coming to your country in 2018 for the World Cup. So they got a bit of a problem. They racist. And so
they're racist.
Players,
they're homophobes. I mean, you know, they're the total package. And we know they are because of the number of right-wingers in this country who get all damp and dewy over Vladimir Putin.
Did you hear about the Polish, some sort of Polish MP in Europe? You hear about that guy?
No, what?
He said that women should lose the vote, but he said it's because men communicate to women via their sperm.
No, the disease is spreading because it was only last night that I had James David, Reverend Pastor Brother Minister Reverend James David Manning from Atla World Missionary Church in Harlem, screaming about Starbucks is putting the male sperm, remember, in the coffee, and the sodomites are coming after you. If you have if you've not heard that clip, you've
got
to go. It's right up there with Hide Your Wife.
We got sperm whispering now to women to do this.
Wait, stop. What?
I don't know. I just thought the whole thing was, I mean, I laughed. I thought, oh my God, this dude. So he's a new UKIP MP in the European Parliament. So it's, special.
Jesus. And you know, it's the 11th of November, and we've been talking a lot about the First World War and how it gave birth to fascism. And, well, it's back. It's back. Nobody seems immune.
It's quite disturbing, some of the parallels, but I'm kind of a bit scared of what's going on in Israel and the greater Israel. That seems to be coming unglued, right?
Oh,
with the stuff in Jerusalem and now all the West Bank stuff, and it's sort of like, you don't get to bomb a place for 50 days and not have any sort of fallout, I guess.
Well, but I mean, it is there's nowhere immune to it, because at the same time
At the same time, you have, you know, Operation Over the Cliff and the stuff going on in the West Bank. The ultra-Orthodox are trying to turn Israel, to the extent that it used to be a little socialist state that had a had an ugly militaristic problem. They're trying to turn Israel into freaking Iran with yarmulkes. I had a story from Texas Betsy just last night. There's a company out there that are selling blurry glasses to ultra-Orthodox men in Israel. They can see everything up close, okay, so they don't walk into light posts, but at about 9 feet out, you know, about 3 meters out, everything gets blurred so they don't have to see any filthy women.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, the massages, yeah, it's all, I mean, I'm still slipping on them jackasses on that airline.
Yeah, well, this is the same thing. They got segregated buses.
Oh, my God.
You know, in Jerusalem today, a Rosa Parks would just be beaten to death.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. It's, it's always laughing when they're talking about, oh, the Palestinians need their own Mandela. No, I don't know what they need. They need some superhero because it's really bad. I just wonder what's gonna happen because the Jerusalem stuff seems really
Here's a fun one. What happens if ISIL gets bored running across Iraq and decides to get frisky with Israel?
I think it's interesting that they're not being as proactive with the Kurds. That's because the Kurds are interested in equality. Oh, my God. So you have women there fighting, and they got a skin in the game because they don't want to be, raped and enslaved and married off to freaks. So they've been turning out to be quite good fighters.
which historically is nothing new. I mean, what was it? Was it Plato who told us about the Amazons?
Well, when someone's threatening to sort of, destroy and the,
and,
you,
right,
know?
And the but the messaging is even a retread now. What is it? For 2 days now, we've had stories about it appears that we may have killed ISIL number two or ISIL number one. Have they still not figured out as soon as you kill one, another one pops up? Because it's not like they haven't figured out leadership structure.
Well, they need to get a set of cards from like George Bush.
Oh my God!
In fact, why don't they just bring George Bush back right quick?
Why isn't that what we're talking about with Jebby?
With that freak of his son who climbs out of women's windows and shit. That dude.
Yeah. Oh, he's got his own. He's got his first political office in the state of Texas now.
He won.
Yeah,
he's the head of the land department.
Yeah,
he's
Texas land commissioner.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Well, anyway, listen, Bob. I'll leave you to it.
Well, don't be such a stranger. I mean, I just added an entire page of email since we've been talking. Oh my God, it's Sandra. Tell Sandra we love her. Yeah.
Oh no. That's real sweet. You know, I don't know what to say, but I'm glad the horn is still going on. So I'll check in. Hopefully sooner than later.
All right, do that, please. Awful good to talk to you.
Bye now. Bye bye.
The one, the only, the inimitable. Sandra, calling from Southern California. I don't know what to do for the rest of the program now. I got 7 minutes and no answers. Hey, yeah, let's go back to that. I gotta run this audio. I just do. This is the series of questions that was asked by a group, and they're kind of a political journalism kind of group at Texas Tech University in Lubbock, Texas. And if you haven't, you gotta. If you have.
Hello, everyone. I'm Courtney Plunk with Polytech. We're here on our home campus at Texas Tech to see just how much our fellow students know about their country. Let's find out if we're politically challenged. What is your name and major?
Leon V. Hill in psychology.
Jonathan Barnes, and I'm a sports management major.
Allison Eden, and I'm a pre-nursing major.
I'm Mitchell Johnson, and my major is human sciences.
Ryan in clinical psychology.
I'm Marissa, and I'm a psychology major.
Who won the Civil War?
Who won the Civil War?
We did? The South?
Like the one in 1965 or what Civil War?
Who won it?
Who was even in it?
Who was in it? Just tell me who was in it.
Ooh, I don't know.
Why you? Because see, this is this sort of has a direct bearing on Veterans Day, doesn't it?
Who won the Civil War? Yeah.
Oh my God. Hey, I'm drawing a blank on some of those things. I feel like I'm on the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
America? I don't know.
That's the.
Well, no, they gave her the buzzer. She answered right. America did win the Civil War. The un-Americans lost. The people who didn't want to be America anymore lost. I think that was a quick buzzer. I'm sorry.
The Jimmy Kimmel Show. America? I don't know.
That's the Confederates, right?
I think dude was a little high.
I have no clue.
The Union. The North. Yes. Okay.
That's the pre-nursing student.
Okay. So who is our vice president?
Don't know.
I have no idea. Of right now? I don't know.
What's his name? Oh my gosh. I have his name in my, I have his face in my head.
Who is the vice president? Is that like a trick question?
Nope.
Okay. I don't know. Oh, I have no idea.
I have no idea.
Don't know.
John. Joe Biden.
Yes. I don't know.
You're not the only one. A lot of people don't know.
No, I still feel.
Okay, who did we gain our independence from?
These are horrible.
I have no idea. Do you know what year we happened to?
Absolutely not.
I couldn't tell you.
Is it like 1677 or something?
You know, the worst part is still to come.
And what show is Snooki on?
And here it is.
Jersey Shore.
What show is Snooki on?
The Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
And then who is Brad Pitt married to?
Angelina Jolie. Angelina Jolie.
And who was he married to before that?
I think it was Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston?
Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston.
Awesome. Thank you.
Sleep tight tonight, America. Oh, see, Sandra, you left too quick. All caps, Twitter. No effing way. How dumb are we? Really dumb. Because, see, here's the fun part. You could probably ask that of people my age. And I don't think the percentages would include it would increase or get better significantly. Just, you know, private message to Sandra. Go over to Crooks and Liars, video, Texas Tech students don't know who won the Civil War. You will not be a well woman. I'm just saying. You will not be well. We're okay, though. It's about 2 minutes or less before the hour. Time to clear out of here. I'm sorry. Tried to take as many calls as we possibly could. Tomorrow, we'll take more. This is, after all, conversation radio, and I think we have an absolute textbook example of that this evening. We're still looking to, finish off, still looking to finish off Scott's Swedish Have a Show on Me challenge. He took care of tonight, and we're working on Thursday, and so we've got $90 to go to finish off Scott's, and we'll go from there. Tomorrow's prayer meeting Wednesday. Don't forget your magic cookies, hats that make God love you, beanies, pasta, whatever. We'll all join in the worship service tomorrow evening. Until then, thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. You, all of you, especially, who form the Horn Family Commune Congregation.
Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to John Fox, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch. And, yes, always, 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 Gina, it is all for you. Good night, y'all.